Hello and welcome to our micronutrients presentation on chloride. We're going to talk about this little companion molecule, companion ion electrolyte that works along and in conjunction with sodium. So before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical practitioner. It's not intended as medical advice. It's just intended as a sharing from me to you of education and support and tools that you can use with your clients to support them through making sure that they've got a good balance of their micronutrients in their system. And so it's a good idea to explain that to them. And if they are under the care of a medical practitioner for any diagnosed condition, that you make sure that any of the things that you talk to them about, that you just encourage them to bounce by their practitioner. So let's look at general information about chloride. So like sodium and potassium, chloride is an electrolyte. It's considered an electrolyte and is involved in maintaining electrolyte balance. It's the most abundant anion in the body. Anion meaning that it has a negative charge versus a cation, which would have a positive charge. And it is basically the opposite. It hangs out with sodium, but it's the opposite charge. So sodium is mostly in the intracellular space. Or extracellular space, and it's positively charged, it's a cation. Chloride is mostly in the extracellular space, and it's negatively charged, and it's an ion. The way that chloride comes about is that it's chlorine, the element chlorine in the periodic table of the elements. It's one of the halogens in the same column as iodine and bromine and fluorine. And chlorine, we don't consider it to be such a positive thing that we want to take into our bodies, but it basically is chlorine that has an extra electron. Or when it combines with hydrogen, the chlorine combines with hydrogen and then is dissolved in water that produces the chloride molecule. It's usually associated with chlorine, with sodium. Where sodium goes, chloride goes. And we're going to see that a lot as we go through the presentation. There's a negative charge that is neutralized by sodium's positive charge. So it's Na plus Cl minus. They come together and that creates a more stable bond because they neutralize each other. And then they travel around and we see that compound as a crystal in table salt. Whoops. So let's look at chloride as an electrolyte. So we're just kind of drilling in on what an electrolyte is. Well, chloride is an anion versus sodium is a cation. But an electrolyte is a salt or an ion that has an electrical charge. It's either negative or it's positive. If it's negatively charged, it's going to move towards the positive side, the positive electrode called an anode. And if it's positively charged, it's going to go towards the negative cathode, which they're both electrodes and they attract these ions to them. So the ions that move towards the cathodes are cations. So the positively charged cations move towards the negatively charged cathode and the negatively charged anions move towards the positively charged anode. And our major electrolytes in the system are sodium, chloride, magnesium, calcium, and potassium. And you'll notice when you look at when an ion is listed, it has a charge associated with it. So an element on the table is just magnesium. But magnesium with those two extra ions, electrons, or it's positive, so two less electrons, is going to be in a state where it's going to attract other molecules to it or other atoms to it. So what are some of the functions of chloride? Well, it's a major electrolyte. It maintains that fluid balance in the body. It maintains pH balance in the body. It's also part of hydrochloric acid, right? HCl, which is stomach acid, which is super important for beginning the digestion of protein in the stomach and also the digestion of minerals. Chloride also assists in a process called phagocytosis, which is a function of white blood cells, where they go around and they gobble up their lymphocytes and they gobble up the antigens, the bacteria, anything that's dangerous to the body. So chloride is important in that. It's also an exchange anion for bicarbonate. So it works in the lungs to do an exchange for bicarbonate and carbon dioxide as we're trying to get the new oxygen in through the lungs and distributed around to the body. It's also in an oxygen exchange in the red blood cells. It helps to maintain the proper blood volume and the blood pressure. Okay, and those go hand in hand because if we have an increase in blood volume, we get an increase in blood pressure and vice versa. If somebody loses a lot of blood, they've got a decrease in their blood volume. The blood pressure tends to go down, which puts them at risk for fainting. So let's look at chloride absorption. It's almost 100% absorbed in the small intestine. Okay, so what that means is that there's very little left over. There's very little that's going to be eliminated in the feces. And the chloride, like I said before, it goes hand in hand. Its best buddy is sodium. So sodium and chloride travel together a lot. And so there's three major absorption routes for sodium in the intestine. And chloride kind of, you know, piggybacks on to those major absorption pathways. So we talked about the sodium glucose co-transport system, and that's where sodium and glucose go together. Well, the chloride just follows along with the sodium through that transport system. It's also, there's the electroneutral sodium and chloride co-transport system where they're transported together. A small amount of the chloride is absorbed that way. And then there's the electrogenic sodium transport system. And what the sodium does, the chloride does, is it follows sodium through that transport. And you can see that on the diagram here. And here's a bigger overview of the diagram. It's showing how water goes through by osmosis, which is a passive process. The potassium will go from this cell, the enterocyte, into the bloodstream via a carrier. And then the sodium and the glucose come in through this little channel, that little carrier. And then the other follows through. The chloride follows. It just like sneaks through. And then we've got the absorption that goes from the cell. Once it goes from the lumen of the intestine into the cell, it's got to go from there into the bloodstream. And there's a variety of carriers there. Excretion of chloride. Well, remember we said almost 100% of this is absorbed, so there's not a lot of it to be excreted. But when there is stuff to be excreted, it goes through three routes. It goes through the feces, through the GI tract. It goes through the sweat, through the skin. And it goes through the kidneys, through the urine. And that's the major vehicle for excretion of chloride. What can cause chloride deficiency? Again, it's not that common, except in these acute states, like similar to what happens with sodium, extensive sweating and prolonged endurance exercises. We're not talking just going out and walking around the block on a hot day. We're talking long periods where you're sweating so much that a lot of fluid is being lost. And if that fluid is being replenished without actually replenishing the electrolytes, that's when you get into trouble with electrolyte imbalance. Vomiting can cause loss of chloride as any of the electrolytes, you know, and it's really important if somebody's been vomiting to replenish not just their fluids, but their electrolytes as well. There's diuretics, you know, when people are taking a medication to cause them to pee more, obviously they're depleting their fluid balance. And when they deplete their fluid balance, they're going to deplete their electrolyte balance. So in any of these situations, it's really important not just to replenish the fluid, but to replenish the electrolytes as well. There's a situation where people can produce too much of the antidiuretic hormone. And the antidiuretic hormone, as it says, it's against diuresis, so it holds on to fluid. Well, if they produce too much or too little, they're going to get into trouble with fluid balance. And then water overload, if they take in too much water, again, that can be depleting and diluting the chloride. Wasting conditions, you know, where people are just wasting away, not eating enough. Extensive bodily burns, because what happens is it sequesters the extracellular fluids to try to do some healing of the injured areas. What are some symptoms of chloride deficiency? Well, alkalosis. Alkalosis is when the blood pH gets a little bit too high. So it should be between 7.35 and 7.45. And when that goes a little bit higher than that, it might even be just 7.46 or 7 or 8. It doesn't have to be much. That creates a situation of alkalosis, which can lead to muscle weakness, loss of appetite, irritability, dehydration, and profound lethargy. I mean, like, can't keep your eyes open lethargy. These are all, can all be signs of chloride deficiency. Again, not a common thing unless there's those predisposing situations like vomiting and diuresis and excess sweating and exercise. The adequate intake of chloride mirrors that of the adequate intake of sodium. So they come in together. They come in together most of the time. So it goes anywhere from, you know, really little, like 0.18 in a newborn infant, all the way up to 2.3 grams in a lactating mom. And for most adults, it's going to be 2.3. So for pretty much everybody, it's 2.3. Food sources. Well, there's obviously table salt, NaCl, right? Sea salt. Sea salt contains it. Seaweed. There's a lot of sodium and chloride in your seaweeds. Rye tends to have a good source of chloride. Tomatoes, lettuce, celery, and olives. And so when you're looking to replenish somebody, like after they've done endurance exercises, you know, green powders with some sea salt, some seaweed in them, celery juice, all these things can be really helpful for the maintaining the balance. Not a lot of medications that deplete chloride, unlike things like sodium and potassium, have a lot more, but diuretics are the main ones. They're the main medications that are going to deplete chloride. There may be others, but that's the main ones that are documented. And how do you assess chloride? Well, we look at serum levels. A serum level should be 100 to 106. So unlike a lot of the vitamins, like, you know, B5 and B12 and all that, the serum levels are quite accurate for assessing the levels of the electrolytes. So we look at those. And we want it to be between 100 and 106, but we also want it to be in balance with the ratios of potassium and sodium as well. You can measure chloride in the sweat. Some people do that. You can measure it in a 24-hour urine. Those are all available. Not commonly done, but they can be done. You can look at a diet journal just to see, are they getting enough? Are they getting too much? And then ask some questions that would give them you an indication, do they have any of the symptoms that might indicate that they either have too much or not enough? So that's pretty much the end of our chloride presentation. I hope that this has been helpful, and we'll see you on the next presentation. Thank you.